Well, it was quite a week last week, wasn't it? All the uncertainty over Evergrande, the hawkishness, unexpected hawkishness of central banks, continued concerns over supply chains, the emerging fuel crisis in the UK and Europe. So this week, well, you can add a US debt ceiling to the list of worries. The deadline is looming and the Democrats and the Republicans don't see eye to eye. We'll also look at the German election results over the weekend. Could they be shifting a bit to the left or just locked in a three-way split that achieves absolutely nothing at all? Plus, New South Wales Freedom Day. Could it be as soon as this weekend? It's Monday, the 27th of September, 2021. It's the morning call from NAB. Good morning. Well, the US dollar was a little stronger on Friday. It gained 0.4% on the Japanese yen, but 1.3% up over the second half of the week last week. It's the highest against the yen since June, in fact. But that's not helped the Aussie, of course, which fell almost 0.5% on Friday, down to 72.6 US cents. Still better than the middle of last week when it dipped down to 72.3. The pound has been on a journey too, falling 0.9% the first few days of last week. Regained most of that, only to lose 0.2% on Friday. So choppy, I think, is the word for last week. And it was the same for stocks as well in the United States. A big fall early in the week, picking up later. So the S&P 500 is 0.5% up, but it did have a 1.7% fall at the start of the week. Bond yields are up on Friday. 10-year treasuries gained 2 basis points to 1.95%. That is 15 basis points higher than they were on Thursday morning, and the highest since the beginning of July. And commodities making quite a few news headlines as well, because WTI and Brent up about 1% on Friday. Brent now over $78 a barrel. At WTI nudging 74, prices not seen since late 2018. So it was a heck of a week, really, wasn't it? What will this week have in store for us? Well, Ray Attrill is NAB's head of FX strategy in Sydney. Let's look, Ray, at what caused all that volatility last week. And early on in the week, it was all Evergrande. And we know, but it seemed to calm down a bit, the attitude towards Evergrande, even though they did default on their coupon payments on Thursday and will probably do it again. But, you know, they defaulted on Thursday, and Friday was actually the calmest day of the week last week.
Yeah, morning, Phil. But, yeah, certainly there was lots to unpick, wasn't there, from last week. And, you know, whether it's Evergrande or whether it's the Fed and the more hawkish signal that we've had from other central banks that have sort of, you know, dominated the week, it's pretty hard to say. But if I look at, you know, if I look at equity markets, I think it's kind of interesting that most of the Northern Hemisphere markets actually ended up on the week. So European and US stocks, for the most part, was up. And look south of the equator, then actually all stocks were down, obviously led by that the Hang Seng, which is where Evergrande and the other sort of large Chinese property companies are listed. So, you know, in that sense, you could say, well, there has been some contagion, at least from Evergrande. As you say, we didn't know on Friday for sure whether or not Evergrande had met this coupon payment on its US dollar bond. Indications late Friday and over the weekend are that they didn't do that, but there is this 30-day grace period before a formal default would be declared. And a lot of the stuff that I've been reading suggests that you know, the Chinese authorities are still sort of insistent that Evergrande shouldn't default, that they should you know, not wipe out mom and pop investors, and that the existing building program should continue, and that local authorities should only be there as a very sort of last resort backstop to step in if necessary to prevent contagion from Evergrande's potential failure. So lots still to play for there.
And we've got the PBOC pumping money into the system, into the banking system as well. So 460 billion won last week, some more over the weekend, but that doesn't help the underlying problem, does it? And they have more coupon payments this week as well, so they could default again.
Right, but well, presumably, given that they didn't pay last Thursday, it's pretty unlikely. They're going to pay this week, but I think that sort of, I wouldn't say it takes a real backseat, but I think nothing's going to happen of any great substance, you would imagine, for the next couple of weeks, but it will be coming back to the forefront as that sort of 30-day calendar ticks down, which will be obviously the sort of towards the end of the third week of October. But I think that, you know, the central banks, I mean, what was curious, I think certainly our rate strategists were sitting there scratching their heads a little bit at how much the yield curves flattened initially out of the FOMC, but then equally head scratching at the re-steepening of curves that we saw at the end of the week. And actually, if I look at US treasuries over the week, the curve actually has hardly changed, even though, as you say, overall yields have risen. We had the Norges Bank raising rates on cue. We had a more hawkish than expected Bank Bank of England. And I wonder whether, you know, markets are quite as confident that, you know, central banks are on top of things, ahead of the curve, and that this will add to the view that inflation will be transitory, given that there's really, you know, no signs that inflation is going to be coming down quickly anytime soon. So I wonder if that's why we haven't seen the sort of flattening that we have seen in the wake of some of the more hawkish Fed signaling in the last month or two.
Well, certainly if inflation is there because of supply chain problems, I mean, we've still got outbreaks happening in China. The UK has got this crazy situation where they haven't got enough truck drivers. So they've got, I heard half of their petrol stations closed on Sunday because they couldn't get enough fuel out to people. So, I mean, and then, you know, look at the price of oil. All of that showing, you know, we're not seeing, inflation is going up rather than down, isn't it?
Well, that's right. The other thing to note is just commodity prices in general have been firm. So, going back to Evergrande, at that sort of peak market fears in the middle of the week, the iron ore price was heading down to $90 and threatening to fall further from there. Where did we end the week? North of 110, I think, anyway. So, so decent gains there and across commodity prices and commodity in general, because one of the big, you know, forget about the financial contagion, so the real economy read through, if Evergrande is to collapse in a heap and a lot of existing building programs, let alone new ones, are going to be, you know, put on ice, then the implications for commodity demand, you know, given that I think steel consumption in China accounts for, I think it's over 40% of consumption is accounted for by home building activity, then the read through to commodity demand is great. But the fact commodity prices are up suggests that markets aren't too fearful that there is going to be quite that sort of real economy contagion, even though we saw things like Japanese stocks of companies with big exposures to China, so paint makers, for example, toilet makers, and air conditioning makers, all suffering, and actually brought the Nikkei down to its heels, having been the outperforming stock market in recent weeks due to anticipation of much greater fiscal spending related to the upcoming LDP and then general elections in Japan. So lots of moving parts still.
It is a development, isn't it, from panic buying toilet rolls to actually panic buying toilets. Now, this is like old times. US budget ceiling. There's another one due. It's that time when, everyone plays brinkmanship. It's happening all over again. The Republicans saying suspending the debt ceiling till December next year is out of the question, which is what the Democrats wants to do. I mean, it's an obvious time, isn't it, for them to try and bring down the size of Joe Biden's spending bill. So there's going to be lots of brinkmanship this week.
No, there is. And then the key date, obviously, is the 30th of September, last day of the US financial year. So at the moment, the US government has no authority to spend a dime after close of business on the 30th. So effectively, without some sort of continuing or stopgap funding resolution between now and then we may be going into the weekend with government shutdowns on our hand. This is sort of separate from, when potentially the US government could default on its obligations if there isn't a lifting of the suspension of or a raising of the debt ceiling. Most estimates I'm seeing suggest that it will probably be the latter half of October or even the beginning of November before the government actually runs out of cash. Remember, it does all this sort of robbing Peter to pay Paul shenanigans with social security funds, etc. So, that's really where that's the real crucial time. I mean, the US has never defaulted, but going back to 2011 when there was that unholy sort of mess trying to get the debt ceiling raised and government was shut down and it came very close to defaulting, and S&P obviously downgraded the US's AAA rating. So that risk still remains, and that's something more for October and November, and obviously the overall fate of the $1.1 trillion infrastructure package and the extent to which it's going to be tied to the broader social spending ambitions of the Biden administration still there. It does seem that Nancy Pelosi is at least trying to sort of separate out the infrastructure from the broader spending bill. So maybe that offers some hope for getting something done this week.
But the longer it goes and the more the economy recovers, the more obviously the Republicans are making the point that, well, do we need this?
Well, that's it. And obviously, the bigger point is the moderate Democrats, obviously led by Joe Manchin, who's still suggesting that, you know, $3.5 trillion is probably, you know, $2 trillion too much. So whether or not those moderate Democrats are going to be placated or not, I think is going to be a key focal point this week.
Now, Germany, the IFO on Friday, business confidence a little weaker than expected. No great shakes, I suspect. But we had the German election over the weekend. That was interesting, wasn't it? Because Angela Merkel, I should say, is retiring now from government. And it looks like there's no clear winner, which is perhaps not a surprise, because it's normally the case in Germany, isn't it? They have to form some sort of alliance. But what could be interesting this time is it might actually have to be a three-party solution, which I suspect means nothing will ever get done. And no one wants to see that in a government. So that might blow a bit of confidence in Germany, mightn't it, this week?
Well, let's see. Yes. I mean, looking at the exit polls, excuse me, frog in the throat. Looking at the exit polls, it looks as though the SPD maybe has its nose ahead. I mean, the exit polls were suggesting somewhere between 25 and 26% of the vote going to the SPD and sort of 24 to 25% to the CDU. Obviously, Angela Merkel's or former Chancellor Angela Merkel's party. And then I look down and the Greens and the FDP, who don't make happy bedfellows as a rule in terms of coalitions, at the moment, you say that maybe the single most likely outcome is the so-called sort of traffic light coalition of the SPD, the Greens, and the FPD. From a market point of view, I mean, one interest is the fiscal policy landscape going to change as the result of a new government being formed? And as you say, if we're going to end up with at least a three-party coalition, then the short answer probably is not that much. And obviously, the FDP, which is very much a sort of liberal free market party, and the Greens, who are obviously, far more disposed towards much greater spending, one would probably be a moderating influence on the other, and maybe not much changes. But sounds like it's going to be, several days at least, and then possibly longer before we know for sure how this thing's going to work out.
Right. Now, the Aussie dollar getting weaker because of the strength in the US dollar, of course, towards the end of the week. But I guess it is all to do with the China story and the US story, isn't it? That's determining the strength or otherwise of the Aussie. But we are getting closer to Freedom Day. Can we expect any enthusiasm or optimism or strength in the Aussie dollar as we get closer to what looks like it's going to be, around October the 11th or 12th?
Well, possibly even sooner. The Tapper Strickland modelling has been pretty good so far. And as of Friday, with our weekly vaccine update, he's suggesting that it could be as early as the 5th of October, which is this coming Saturday, isn't it? Yeah. When that 70%, in New South Wales I'm talking about, so, 70% fully vaccinated adult or over 16 population. But the Berejiklian government has said that it will be the Monday after we meet that 70%. So, but at the moment, I think the briefings to businesses are that you should prepare for whatever reopenings are going to be allowed and intra-regional travel from Monday the 11th. So that's still being held out as Freedom Day, which the government doesn't want to call Freedom Day because there will still be restrictions. So market impact, probably limited. And as you say, on the Aussie, we actually ended the week pretty flat. Quite a lot of volatility during the week, and then some decent gains on Thursday, most of which were given back on Friday. The flip side of that is that the US dollar overall is marginally firmer, but not much. And I think you're right, China's still focused, but probably more less directly Evergrande related and more, how much is the economy slowing and is it slowing further? So things like the PMI numbers that we'll get later in the week, I think will be pretty important. There will be some read through down to Australia from those.
And we've got a few Fed speakers around today. Charles Evans talking at the National Association for Business Economics. Lael Brainard is talking at that as well. We had quite a few talkers at the end of last week, of course, as well. So the question is, are they going to keep this hawkish slant? Well, they did on Friday.
Well, we did have Esther George and Loretta Mester, who are considered two of the more hawkish members, really throwing their weight behind, an early a commencement of tapering, actually as early as the November meeting, whereas markets are now conditioned to expect an announcement in November for a December start. And Mester did say that she is one of the 2022 rate hike dots, but I don't think that was any surprise either. So some interest. Brainard and Evans are very much at the dovish end of the spectrum, so there might be a little bit of a counterpoint there. Maybe rowing back a little bit on building expectations of an initial rate hike or hikes in 2022, which are now almost fully priced, I have to say. But we've got something like 15 Fed speakers, and probably the highlight, we're going to have Jay Powell and also Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen both testifying before Congress tomorrow. So I think that's probably the most interesting.
Yeah, that we want to watch. Absolutely. All right, and durable goods order as well for August for the United States as well tonight. But we'll leave it there for now. Good to talk. We'll catch you very soon, Ray. Thanks.
Will do. Thanks, Phil.
And do you know what? If this week isn't as exciting as last week, we're going to try our hardest to make it seem exciting on The Morning Call. I'm Phil Darby for NAB. Back again tomorrow morning. See you then.